Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness. And you know, this is a special episode of our podcast because it's snowing and our kids are home from school and they're going to be here for a while.
When it snows in the South shuts down.
With a capital D.
I
just sat in an airplane for 4 hours.
Yeah, he tried to go.
Didn't go anywhere.
So interesting segue. So Penn has, we do have real jobs. I know people like to think that we just get to make goofy videos, but we are partners in a company called Walk West. It's a video production and digital marketing company. And so Penn still goes out and does actual work.
I put on a little suit.
He has a little suit.
Yeah.
And he was sitting on the airplane today trying to leave town and nope.
And I'm back.
and he's back.
This was originally just going to be you.
I know. I had it all planned out. It was going to be like a solo intro.
You were going to play the victim, right?
No.
The woman alone with the children.
No,
who are home from school.
It was going to be very, I was really had it planned out, but now you're here.
I know.
No,
anyway.
Kidding.
All right. So if you haven't experienced the podcast before, we make funny videos on YouTube and Facebook. Put one out today that's doing quite well.
Yeah. So, and I think if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you've heard me say how I don't actually love it when a video goes super viral.
You don't.
I
now understand that. And I think, honestly, if you're a super listener, you can probably fill in the blanks as to why, right? Because you know Kim better now from listening to these podcasts. She feels all the feels. She's
all
an empath.
Feels.
So she feels that positive energy. And boy, does she also feel if there's any negative energy, even if it's a sliver of a tenth of a percent, she feels it.
No, so here's my theme song of life. Ready? If you're happy and you know it, overthink it. If you're happy and you know it, overthink it. If you're happy and you know it, then my anxiety will
really
show it.
You're going to somehow blow it. If you're happy and you know it, then you're going to somehow blow it. If you're happy and you know it, overthink it. Did you just come up with that? That's really good.
So I was.
Hang on. Should we bring a piano in and make that like our open song?
Oh my God. So I was actually singing that to my niece yesterday because she was overthinking something. And I was like, yeah, she's inherited it from me. So I was anxious about, we put out this song yesterday that we actually wrote a year ago. We did a kind of a new, fresh take on the Baby It's Cold Outside called Baby Just Go Outside. And we wrote it a year ago. But we really felt like last year, with all that was happening with the Me Too movement, it would have been interpreted as mocking the victims. And we never, ever wanted that to happen because
we are victims.
We are.
Yeah. We are both victims of sexual, I don't know what it's called, abuse, groping, whatever it was. It's gross. You can listen to a prior episode. I don't want to talk about it again today. I'm in a good mood. It happened to you.
Yeah. So we both worked in newsrooms, Penn actually, and in a restaurant situation with Penn. Penn was, he's 6'5" and he was groped twice by a boss. And although you could have physically overpowered him, like, not cool, dude. And neither of us really talked about it until we realized, like, how many other people this happened to. So it was too sensitive last year. This year, we felt like there had been some time. And
by the way, you are a better barometer of this than I am. And I'm glad, because you sent it to your friends.
Yeah, last year, they were like, no,
and they
too
all
soon.
Thought, they all thought it was funny, and they all thought it was too soon.
Yeah.
And I think most of your friends have similar stories to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's really sad how – but then this year – the radio stations have banned Baby It's Cold Outside.
And now there's a backlash to the backlash.
There's a backlash to the backlash to the backlash.
Right.
And listen,
ours is another backlash. There'll be a backlash.
There'll be a backlash to the backlash, sure. Which was a backlash. So it's one of those things where the original song, and I don't even really feel like talking about it. The original song was, the intentions were not that. Here was the original song. The woman wanted to stay. The woman wanted to have a
right.
time
she
with
was,
it.
She was flirting, and that was the way that flirting, I guess, happened then.
Yeah, but guess what? Now the times have changed, and now that's not how I hear it. And I get it. Like, that girl wanted to get after it, but she couldn't. It, because this is how
Wait,
she
why
talk.
Couldn't she?
Well, that no, are you kidding me? Back in that time, if a woman had
the audacity
to say, actually, I would like to stay, she would have been shamed.
Okay.
And so she couldn't say that. I get that. I'm here for that.
Right.
But now you hear it differently. So we changed the words. And there's been a backlash to the backlash to the
I don't
backlash.
Think there has been. I think people are enjoying this song. There will be at least one thought piece written by...
Oh, there'll be an open letter to us.
Written by at least one magazine. And
there'll be an open letter to us,
like,
I'm sure.
But honestly, we are right in the middle. We're all in the middle of this Me Too movement. We're trying to better understand how to communicate with each other, right? Mm-hmm. And so at this time, why not give a fun alternate version of a song and just let it be that?
If you're happy and you know it, overthink it.
If you're happy and you know it, overthink it. If you're happy and you know it, Kim is probably gonna blow it. If you're happy and you know it, overthink it. Okay, can we talk about our guest today?
Oh my gosh.
This is
okay.
Such a non sequitur because he's awesome.
No, this is.
Are you gonna find a way to tie this in?
My sitch at work, I was so miserable as in my job as a reporter. I would sit on the floor with my curling iron because he had to use a curling iron. You didn't have to. I just wanted good anchor hair. And I would cry before work every day. And I thought that's just like what happened. I thought you just cried before work every day. And I have to say, there are some blessings from depression and anxiety. And you've heard me like drone on about like this depression and anxiety thing that I get to live with. But the benefit is like your body like will tell you. Like, what's up? And I think a lot of people can go through life in situations where they're just kind of like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. But as my version of depression, like my body would shut down because I was in a job situation that I really didn't like. It took me years to figure it out, but I got out of the news business. I started a business that's now employing lots. I started with a partner, but we started a business where Penn got to quit his job and we've been building it together. So it's been really cool and it was really scary and we embraced the crazy. And so people first, because we made that move and it ended up being kind of a public move. People ask us all the time, like, should I quit my job? I really want to do this. How do I do this? Should I quit my job? We are not experts at all. But, we asked the question to Pete Smith. Pete Smith is kind of an expert in this.
Yeah. No, yeah. That, I think I would say that is his wheelhouse.
Yeah. And not on whether you should quit your job, but just on how you can lead a life with more significance. Because you are not going to be happy 100% of the time in your job. You're not going to be happy 100% of the time, nothing. But you are going to be fulfilled. And there are ways to search for significance and fulfillment. And if you're not finding it in your job, maybe there's a different way you can do it. We talk a lot about just embracing the crazy and answering the question of, is this the right move? So if it's something that you're pondering about how to live with more fulfillment, how to find a job you love, this is going to be a good podcast for you. So Pete is an Amazon best-selling author of Dare to Matter, Choosing an Unstuck and Unapologetic Life of Significance. He had a stroke at the age of 35. He goes into all of this and how it really, that near-death experience really changed his life. So we hope you enjoy Pete Smith.
And we're going to meet him in just a second. But because we are so long-winded, we want to take a quick minute and thank some of our sponsors, like Care Of. Love these guys. They support us, so please support them.
So Care Of does this amazing online quiz about your diet, health goals, lifestyle choices. Yep.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, choices. Yeah. And it takes Don't 5 minutes churlish. And find out what vitamins and supplements you really specifically need. And they send you these personalized, cute little packets of vitamins and supplements right to your door. It's a monthly subscription service. And they say that 90% of people fall short of the FDA recommended guidelines for at least one vitamin or nutrient.
Yeah, and I'm probably one of them. I haven't really gotten on the Care Of train, but you have. And it's like affected your energy level and your sleep habits. And you've been pretty psyched about Care Of.
No, it's been great. And it's just like easy to remember, and they're right there. And then a portion of every sale goes toward the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. And okay, so here's the deal. You,
what do you do?
Care Of puts honesty first, providing all the research that supports each of their recommendations backed by scientific advisory boards. So here's what you do. For 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter the promo code HOLDERNESS, HOLDERNESS, for 25% off your first month. Go to takecareof.com, enter promo code HOLDERNESS, HOLDERNESS, for 25% off. You'll love it.
Let me ask you something. Have you learned how to spell our name quickly yet? Or is it still like take a little while for you to remember how to spell it? It's a big, confusing last name.
I'm good now.
But like at the beginning, it was a bit much.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Super. Yeah. And welcome Pete Smith.
Oh, hey. Thank you.
It's so funny. We've been sitting here talking for about 5 minutes before pressing record, so now we have to pretend like, Pete, thanks for coming in.
He just got here.
Pete just walked in.
Wow, what an interesting person.
Yes.
And all those things that we just said about him, which we haven't recorded yet.
We do that later. Wow. Okay. So we've been having a lot of fun. Pete is the 7th of 8 kids, so he's used to chaos, so he's going to do very well here.
Looking forward to it. This is great.
Okay. Yeah. So let's back it up for a second. You came to be who you are now in terms of what you do for a living and speaking and motivating people and helping people manage because of a near-death experience.
Yeah.
Can you walk us back? Tell us about that day.
Sure. May 6, 2010, the day I had a stroke. I was 35. I was just shy of my 36th birthday. No symptoms, nothing. Just happened, boom.
Was anybody with you?
So Whitney was upstairs.
Okay.
And I had finished checking emails from the night before, closed the laptop, and boom, you know, that it happened.
What did it feel like?
At first, my legs were wobbly. And I remember thinking, that's odd. You know, is it that I didn't have breakfast? Did I have coffee? What's the deal? But let's see what happens. Then they started getting really wobbly. And then I remember thinking, oh no, I'm going to collapse here. So I quickly called out to Whitney, who was upstairs, and fell to the ground. A chair hit my blocked my fall on the way down. So I'm sitting upright on my dining room floor, just panicked, trying to figure out what's happening, you know. And then all of a sudden, what I heard internally was my body begin to shut down. And I remember thinking, no, like this isn't happening. What's happening, you know?
You heard it.
Yeah, it's so hard to describe. So best way I can describe is think about turning your car off. You know, you have an engine on a car, you turn it off, you hear the engine start coming down to a halt. That's exactly what I heard internally, is everything just started slowing down. Now, medical professionals are going to tell you that's when all the blood starts rushing to your vital organs, right? That's what you hear. And so that's what was happening.
Weird. I've never heard it described that way.
Totally weird.
Meanwhile, your wife probably hears this? Or
She doesn't know any of this is going on. She heard me call out to her.
Right.
And so I'm sitting there trying to figure it out, hearing my body shut down, and all these things are just now rapidly firing through my mind because I'm thinking, I'm dying. Like, I can't stop this. I have about 60 seconds left to live. Like, this is it, you know? And so I remember thinking about Whitney, my wife's name, and thinking, God, she's going to come downstairs. She's going to see me dead on my dining room floor. Like, what's going to happen with her? What's the impact on that? What happens here? I thought about my parents, my brothers and sisters, right? All 8 of them.
All 97 of them.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And then I remember thinking, I wonder which one of them is going to hear the news first and which one of them is going to have to break the news to my parents. Like, oh, this
there
is what...
There was a lot going on.
Like, firing in and out, right? And then I remember asking myself a question like, did I live? Did I do everything that I wanted to do? Did I run my race to win? Did I change anyone's life? Did I live, right? And so...
You got through a lot in 60 seconds.
I also thought about the softball game the night before.
Oh my gosh!
Stop it. No.
It's a true story.
No.
True. Yeah, I played softball the night before, and there was a call at the plate that I disagreed with.
You're still mad at the ump.
Yeah.
You're about to die, and you're mad at the ump from last night from a community softball game.
If you just
which
saw
has
the way
no
I did, it would have been great. You know, we could have won the game, and that's really what mattered.
I would do the exact same thing. Yeah. That's why I'm shouting right now. Yeah.
But you think of those things. And actually, I was thinking, oh, he's probably just a really nice guy. He's just umping a game. You know, but then, boom, the next thought was coming off. And so it was really –
So you weren't thinking, like, boy, he's going to be really sorry he made that bad call now that I'm dead.
No. But I hope he feels that way today.
Okay. Yeah, right. But even though you didn't die. Yeah, okay,
got it. All I'm going to say is I was safe. So nonetheless, but that's what you're thinking of is all these different things. And then finally, like, did I live? Did I matter? You know, so to answer your question before, no, Whitney didn't know until she came to the top of the stairs. She calls out to me saying, did you call me? And so I tried calling out to her to say, come downstairs. And that's when I realized I can't say. I couldn't talk. She comes downstairs and I was trying to tell her to call 911.
But you couldn't get it
out. I couldn't. So that's pretty indicative that you probably should call 911, which she did. She's very smart. And so she comes down and she's leaning in front of me. She calls 911 and I'm looking at her and she's on the phone with paramedics. And all of a sudden she says, a stroke? I'm not sure. How would I know? And I kind of like turned away thinking, what do you mean a stroke? You know, I'm 35.
Right.
You know, like old people have strokes. You know, people.
That's what everybody thinks.
That's what everyone thinks. And then so I'm off in Neverland, come back and I'm looking at her and she's touching my right arm in front of me and I can't feel a thing.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm looking at her. She's grabbing my arm and there's nothing, like total loss of sensation on the right side of my body. So that was the stroke, you know. And so eventually then I heard the ambulances come and all worked out and taken to the hospital. And yeah, just a complete recovery because all of a sudden things started coming back. And
right.
So they rushed me to take the scans. And what they found was there was a blockage. So I had a clot, which was right at the base of my brain. And then the scans revealed how the brain was redirecting blood flow around the clot. Just fascinating.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The human body's amazing.
I didn't do anything to cause the stroke, but I didn't do anything to recover from it either.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it was like total blessing.
Yeah. And so in those moments, I mean, there's a lot going through your head. Obviously, the terrible call that was made against you, very important. But like there was also
a very
But so like what was the blessing that came from that? Like how did that like shift the way you lived your life?
So that the idea of did I live, society is going to continue to shove this message down our throats that our greatest endeavor is the achievement of success and happiness, right?
Whatever that means.
And in that moment, I didn't think about either one of those things because all I could think about was whether or not I was significant, right? So in other words, at the precise moment when I thought my life is ending, one of the things that mattered to me most was whether or not I mattered at all. So did I matter? So that was really the message that I took from that experience and realized, hey, look, this is what we're going to think about in the last days of our lives, but do we have to wait until those moments, or can we kind of take that idea and really figure out what matters and apply it to what we do today personally and professionally?
Having that feeling, you have to feel like that was a real gift for you now, which is a crazy thing to consider when it was major trauma, it was life-threatening, it obviously affected your family.
Yeah.
It was a gift.
It was. And it's odd because you don't wish that on it. You don't wish that experience.
Yeah, like I'm not going to go home and try to induce a stroke
so that I can live.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But you want what the lessons learned from that. You want that for people. You want them to get a better perspective of, look, so much of what we worry about, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know what I mean? And here's actually what matters and here's how we can apply it to what we do today.
And
sweet.
I think people are craving and I think that's why people make comments on the internet. They want to be heard. People just want to know that they matter in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you think that we live then in opposition to that? So we want to matter, but then yet we're leading lives that are just like in the pursuit of being, quote, happy or significant or successful.
Yeah.
So why do you think that is?
So I think that the term happiness is a little bit overused or misunderstood, you know.
Right.
And look, I'm a big fan of success and happiness. You know, I'm anti either one of those things. I think they're great, but I think they have a role. I think we're better served obtaining both of those things, not when we pursue them as goals in and of themselves, but when they're the byproduct of pursuing something much more meaningful, you know. So in other words, instead of pursuing happiness, what if it was more about fulfillment? And we're all parents, right? And so we understand the difference that There are some things our kids do that do not make us happy, right? There are some things my boys do. I'm not happy with some of the decisions that they make. But there's not a day that goes by that I'm not absolutely fulfilled by being a dad. Mm-hmm. And so when you're fulfilled, you are able to weather those moments when you may not feel happy about something. So I think sometimes it's just reframing people's perceptions of what are we actually looking for? Is it about happiness, which is a feeling which can come and go, or is there something more to it than that?
You know, and it's so interesting when you're talking about happiness and fulfillment and significance, I think that we compartmentalize that in different parts of our lives. So are you happy and fulfilled at work? Are you happy and fulfilled at home? Are you happy and fulfilled in your connection with the community?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a message that goes across all of those, or do you need to compartmentalize those things?
So part of what I help people do is to choose what I call take a stand. And your stand is all about purpose, right? And so if anything, it's getting people to identify what's their purpose, which, by the way, is a choice, right? Mm-hmm. And so many people say, well, I haven't found my purpose yet, you know? Well, what if it wasn't lost? You know what I mean? Like, what if it was simply a choice where you get to decide to categorize what you want your life to be about in one or two words and have that be the main drive in every aspect of your life? So in other words, if I stand for significance, if I stand for impact, what I will do then is look in my personal life and figure out what else do I need to do personally so that I can create a significant impact in the lives of people that mean the most to me. Same thing professionally, right? If I'm coming from that place, then that's the mainstay. And then I get to choose what I do in every aspect of my life. But it's all with the same intent that my purpose here is really to have a significant impact in the lives of those that I'm meant to serve.
On the work front, we get, I would say daily, we get emails with people asking us for advice.
Like, should we quit our jobs?
Should we quit our jobs?
Because we're kind of an example of a couple that took our job, said we're unhappy with it, and started our own thing. And we got lucky.
Okay.
Oh, so that's the thing, is that we get a lot of the, well, you know, I wish I could do that, but I don't feel like I wish I could do this. I wish I could do that. And then my advice is always to just to take the leap off the cliff, which is not always the most responsible advice. But it makes me wonder, are these people truly unhappy with their jobs, or is there something else they could shift, they could change, that where their job doesn't necessarily have to be all that they do?
Right.
So,
right. And it's a loaded question to some degree. People say, right, should I quit my job? Right. Well, look, my candid response is, do you suck at your current one? Oh, you do? Great. Yes, you should probably quit your job, right? Or I've surveyed all the people you work with, and 9 out of 10 of them can't wait for you to be gone. So now's a good time for you to quit, right? So, but let's look at the wording that they're using. Should I quit my job? Are they seeking validation from me by asking that question, right? Which they don't need. Are they asking my permission for them to go out? They don't need my permission, and that's concerning. Because then they're also, are they using me as the reason to, when it doesn't work out, as someone to blame?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if they say, well, I was undecided, and then I asked Pete Smith whether or not I should quit my job, and he said yes, and it's turned out to be a disaster, it's his fault,
yeah,
right? So I'm always leery of when people say, should I quit my job? Some of the questions I'll ask them is, well, how long have you been thinking of doing this? And a lot of times they'll say, oh, God, I've been thinking about this forever, right? For as long as I can remember. And so my advice to them is a little bit contrary to what they're normally told. And I'll tell them to stay. Mm-hmm. Right. So if they say, should I quit my job? How long have you been thinking about this? God, forever. Then no, you should probably stay where you are. And it takes them by surprise, just what you just did, right? Because it's contrary to what everyone else has been telling them. Yeah, go out and do it, go out and do it, go out and do it. I tell them not to.
But they're going to say why?
Why not?
Yeah,
right? And so
question.
Part of it is to get to challenge them to, it's a pattern interrupt, right? They're used to people saying, yeah, you should. And here I am saying, no, you should probably stay. And partially because they don't want it that bad. They don't really want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, no, yes, I do. No, if you did, you would have already found a way. So clearly it's not that bad. And not that you have to wait till things are that bad.
Yeah.
But you have to get to a point where your desire is that you can't imagine doing anything different.
Right.
You know
what I mean?
So, is the reason you're saying that because you believe that, or is it because you want them to say, oh, yeah, and then quit their job?
Part of it. Okay.
They need to be able to make the decision themselves and defend it themselves.
At some point, how successful are you going to be if you continue to remain indecisive, right? So
right.
If they're asking, should I, I have a different approach. It's very different if they're saying, hey, here's what I'm considering. What advice would you give for someone who's ready to jump or what advice would you give? Yeah. Right now, it's now we're having a different conversation. Yeah. It's not permission based anymore. It's seeking advice, seeking counsel, which I think, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But if you're going to sit here and tell me you've been thinking about jumping for 10 years, no, nah, why don't you stay where you are?
Because you haven't taken your stand yet.
It doesn't. You're obviously not that bothered where you are. Things are okay. So what's the burning desire? What's the reason for why you want to make the change?
Don't you feel like you can, when you're determining your purpose, you're taking your stand, and yours is to live a life with significance. You can still make those shifts within a current job you have. If you can make those mindset shifts, and maybe it's finding different responsibilities or exerting yourself in different ways.
Correct.
So for me, for Kim, for Max, for Christina, we've all made major career shifts over the last 5 years.
Christina, by the way, is in the room, and Christina works with us as well. She doesn't even have a microphone.
Christina's the one who introduced us to Pete. Say hello, Christina.
Hello.
That's
enough, Christina.
She's not. She doesn't want to be part of the Holderness. Oh, she was the elephant.
Yes, she played
there. If you watched our Thanksgiving video, she's the elephant.
Yes.
Is that
okay.
right? That, I didn't
she
know
was
that.
The elephant. She was a great elephant.
I know. And now she's like, she wants to crawl into a hole and die. Anyway, okay, let's go.
Pete, the four of us have all made major career changes in the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you ask any of us, we will all say one of the reasons why we did it was because we had the support of the people around us who we loved and who we cared about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm only asking because is that necessary? Or, like, what if you don't have that support set?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we hear from people who are single, who are alone, who, like, not lonely, but they're not part of a family structure.
Right.
And it makes it harder to do that.
Sure. Yeah. So is that important? Yes. And you talked about the support. This is where people who ask for advice, one of the things you would tell them is, let's talk about your support structure at home. And one of the top conversations I had to have with my wife, when I went out on my own as well, and this was, you know, in 2011, my wife's a teacher. And so we went from dual income, and I had a very successful job, I was doing fine, to all of a sudden, hey, I don't know when my next paycheck is coming. Are we willing to make the sacrifices necessary in order for us to live off of your paycheck, your teaching salary paycheck?
I don't know if you guys know this, but teachers don't make enough money.
She work at that new magical school, Gold Money Academy?
She does.
Where they pay teachers what they're actually worth.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and that's the other part of it is people, they like the glorious aspect of envisioning what they think this new life is going to be, but they don't necessarily like the sacrifices that are going to have to be made. And so are they willing to make those sacrifices in advance? You know, to your point, you may not have that support structure. Can you start living your life in a way where you are within the financial boundaries of what you anticipate to be over the next couple of months? Are you willing to make those sacrifices? Are you willing to not have coffee every day at Starbucks? Are you willing to, not that you want to go back to ramen noodles, I don't wish that on anyone, but are you, you know, peanut butter and jelly? Are you willing to go back and do those things that are necessary?
I won't have you badmouth ramen in this office, sir. I will not stand for, I've been enjoying this interview until just then.
Pete.
Sir? No, okay. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. So how do you have that conversation, though? Have you figured out the best way to have that conversation with your loved ones?
Well, sure. Yeah, part of it is being clear with what your expectations are moving forward. So I didn't paint the rosy picture for Whitney. I didn't say, I'm going to go out on my own. I think this is what's going to happen. It was almost like, I don't know what's going to happen. What if the worst happens and no one likes me and I never get an engagement and, you know, I bring in zero. And so one of the things I learned when I went out on my own is I was like the poster child for how not to go out on your own, by the way. It was like awful, you know, and I didn't have any clients, and I don't know, I should have gotten my MBA, because what I didn't realize is that when you don't have clients, you actually make zero. Did you know that?
Like
zero? You have
what?
Zero income with
wow.
No. I was like, God, I wish
you heard
someone
it here first,
told,
guys.
I wish there was this podcast before I jumped out.
We're now a business podcast.
Yeah,
guys, you have to have clients to make money.
Exactly.
Print that.
I had no idea. So that's a good place to start that conversation. But so you go back and say, look, how long can we survive with me bringing in zero?
Right.
What is that?
The runway, right?
Like, the runway.
Exactly.
Yeah, it may take, and it usually takes longer than sometimes you even anticipate. Mm-hmm. So if this was a year long, what do we need? What are our bills? What are we willing to sacrifice on? And that was that conversation. It's just really being clear with expectations of if it goes this long, are we willing to to embrace that grind.
Yeah, the conversation we had, we moved down. I was a reporter at Inside Edition in New York. Great people who worked there. I hated the job because I had a baby. He was the Manny, and I had a baby, and I was, like, on an airplane with a breast pump. What? And,
well, I'm laughing because, like, the only stories they sent her out on were people who either lost their fingers in a hot dog factory.
Or a salad. Or somebody ate the finger in a salad.
Broke into apartments and dressed up in women's underwear.
Yes. Like, those were the only types.
She was the creep reporter.
Like, isn't that kind of Inside Edition, though?
Totally.
It is, but there's also that, the, like, April's, like, going to... I know. Tiger Woods' wedding, and you've got like the hot dog, and
I had the, I
and
had
they were all in Houston.
All of
everybody
them.
Was in Houston.
And they thought because I was from Florida, they're like, you could just swing by Houston. I'm like, guys, I live in New York now, and you can't swing. There's no swinging by Houston. Anyway, yeah, I was the exclusive, like, you've cut your finger off reporter.com.
Yeah.
And I hated it. And so I told Penn, like, you just have – I spent so many days, like, on our bathroom floor. I was like, I had, like, a curling iron in one hand. And, like, I was like – and they'd call me. They're like, go to Houston. And that was a bad impression of my boss.
We just doing – and we love her, so I'm not going to say her name. No, he said it.
Yeah.
And, Esther.
Good old Esther. And so I'd have, like – I had, like, one curling – like, curling with my curling iron. I'm like, I have to get on an airplane. And I had a baby, and I was so miserable. And at that moment, I was like, I'm going to quit, and I'll just go work at Starbucks. Like, if I'm lucky enough to get a job at Starbucks. So I told him, I'm like, you get a job. Like, you get, and that's how we ended up in North Carolina. And then I tried to go back to work as a reporter here. And we needed the money. Like, it wasn't like we had, like, cushy, like, a lot of, like, runway, as Penn likes to say. And I sat at my desk and, okay, come on now. Max has, like, my reporter videos up now. This is just not nice. So I sat at the desk in the local newsroom here, and I called Penn. I was like, hey, honey, I'm about to go in and quit my job. And he's like, I'm a very risk-averse person, but there was, like, I could not sit there for 1 second longer.
Yeah.
Like, I had no choice, and we didn't really have a real conversation, so kudos to you. But he's like, okay, well, you'll get another job. I'm like, I'll make something work, we'll figure it out, but I can't do, I literally cannot sit in that seat for 1 second
longer. And that's not something Kim's ever done, so I definitely respected that opinion. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Because, I wasn't a quitter. Like, I didn't quit jobs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, right.
I mean, that's a different
I guess. But there's what's great about that is you had that burn the ship moment.
Okay.
Right? So are you familiar with burning the ships?
I've never done it before.
I've watched Game of Thrones.
Right. So
so Blackwater. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yep. Dragons, the whole bit.
Got it.
All right. So short story, or long story, but I'll make it short. Hernando Cortez, conquistador years ago, brings an army to the shores of Mexico. They're going to engage in a battle. The men get off the boats. They're on the shores, and they turn around, and Cortez's order was burn the ships, right?
They don't have an option to go back.
No option to retreat. So I think that there's a pillar in the significance framework that I talk about called embracing the crazy. And it talks about exactly what you just did.
We use that all the time. Sorry, go ahead.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just about us in our relationship. We're like
just embrace the crazy.
Yeah, embrace the crazy. Yeah.
And so the idea behind that pillar is that at some point you're going to be butting up against your own fears and your critics. You know, people are going to say, don't do that. That's crazy. And so the whole concept is to embrace that crazy, to go just beyond what's become comfortable, even though we have our critics who are going to say, why did you do that? That's crazy. And so it's removing all of the retreat options that
you
have. So I did the same thing when I jumped out on my own. It was in 2011. And when I went through this really great period of zero clients, I got to the point. Oh, and by the way, Whitney comes to me shortly after and says, hey, we're pregnant. Right? It was like, what?
Perfect.
So we celebrate.
Mother Nature
knows. Apparently celebrated unemployment.
Yes. Mother Nature knows when to do this to you.
This would be great. So,
by the way, guys, also babies cost money. Anyway, go ahead.
They do. They do. Yeah. Selfish little things. So, here I am trying to think of, all right, I'm going to give myself 90 days, right? This is my lack of MBA experience of figuring out how long this is going to be. And I was excited when I first went out. Month one, like zero clients, zero more. I didn't even know what I was offering. Like, that's how bad it was. Month two, still nothing great. As we start getting toward the end of the 90 days, I noticed a shift in how I was describing work. I kept saying, I don't know if now's the right time. I don't know if now's the best time. I didn't know that my wife, that we were pregnant. Maybe I jumped the gun a little bit. I'm thinking about stopping because I can always revisit this later. And so there was a change in what I was describing. All of a sudden it became rationalizing why it wasn't going to work, right? And I realized in that moment that my ship was my resume, because I had a pretty good track record success-wise. I was in operations before. I was a teacher at one point. So I knew that if there was an opportunity that I was qualified for, if I submitted my resume, I had a good chance of at least getting an interview. And if I got an interview, maybe I'll get an offer, you know? And so I was spending some of my time trying to figure out, how do I make this work? And the other half of my time trying to figure out what job opportunities were available, plan B. And so what I ended up doing was I burned the ship. I erased my resume. So I deleted my resume.
You literally deleted it.
Deleted.
Pressed the delete
button. Cannot get it back. Yeah.
Okay.
You could always spend another 6 to 8 hours recreating it and everything else, right?
But the idea
was this was a symbolic gesture on your part. And I got it. Okay.
Yeah. And you absolutely panic in those moments, right? Like you call Penn to tell him, hey, I'm about to walk in and quit. And then you do, and then you're like,
Holy crap.
What? You know, like, just kidding. You know?
Psych.
Yeah. The next day, you're like, you have remorse and all this other stuff. And that's kind of the idea. But the great thing is, when you shut that door, all of a sudden, every ounce of your energy and focus gets directed toward, all right, how do I make this work?
Yeah.
And you become creative.
Focused.
You become focused.
Yeah.
And
that
you become more creative, and you become more determined.
Because you have to.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
So when I put in my notice at the TV station, that was probably the most momentous thing, because we went from two jobs to one job to zero. Like, going from one to zero was a tough one,
well,
too. Well,
right? So what happened was I called my friend Sharon, who we've had on this podcast before, and I said, hey, I just quit my job. Let's start a business. So she and I started like media training, public speaking training, basically any way I could use my resume to try to my big shiny resume to try to impress people of like, I can teach you how to talk good. And then they said, hey, do you do social media? Was new. Do you do social media management? Sure do.
Yeah.
And then we figured it out. Do you guys do video production? Sure. Honey, go buy a camera. Like, we do video production now. So we actually
do you do editing. Yep.
Sure do. Honey,
go buy some software.
And we just kind of figured it out.
Right.
Again, did not have an MBA and probably wouldn't recommend that. But then we got busy enough that it was like, hey, Penn, we need what you do. We need like a shooter, an editor. I can't promise I'm going to pay you.
But you should
quit your job.
We had zero clients. Yeah. So back to me and the story I was just telling a second ago. Because I was going to say something nice about you.
I was getting there, though. We had to get to like how you quit your job.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. You're welcome.
So I went in and I said, I'm leaving. And that was the point where we went from one job to zero stable jobs. We had a couple of clients, but they were one-off deals.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how much longer we were going to have those clients. And so I quit, and then I met her at this – the kids wanted to go to like an outdoor concert, and I met them, and they had posters.
We made posters.
Of like, congrats, Daddy, I'm proud of you. I will never forget that moment. That's why I was asking about the support.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have gone through with it if I didn't have that. I don't know if that makes me a weak person or a lucky person. I don't know what it makes me.
Yeah.
But I think everyone needs something or somebody or some force to pat them on the damn back when they do something like this.
Right.
And I was so fortunate to have that.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of it is being intentional with surrounding yourself with certain people that have what you need. Right. So in other words, if you're in a position where you work for an organization, you want to be a manager – well, you better have someone in your top five network who happens to be a manager, someone who can talk about what you need to do in order to get to that next step. If you're an entrepreneur, you better have entrepreneurs in your network, or at least be intentional with forging relationships with entrepreneurs. And so many people are content to stay within the people that they know, but that's not always what's driving them to that next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and a change of scenery and a change of – and you have to – even as adults, making new friends is not an easy thing to do at all. But I think that for as much as you have to be self-empowered, you have to do this stuff yourself, external – like, we're lying if we say external forces don't play a part in this.
Sure they do.
Yeah.
You know, a local business owner around here, a friend of mine, opened up a bakery recently, and he named it after his daughters so that he couldn't fail.
Is that Lucette Grace?
Yes.
No way. I didn't know that story. That's great.
Lucette and Grace are his two daughters'
names. Well, he's very
delicious.
Successful.
Yeah.
Delicious
that was his, like, if I put my daughter's names on it, I can't let it fail.
But yeah. failing, like, but you should also expect to fail, too. Like, we had some, we had some, and continue to, by the way, have some classic failures.
Oh, God, yes. We, like, on, I'm reminded every day by my wife of things that I've fallen short of doing.
Not true.
In a very loving way.
Not true.
In a very see, let's talk about working with your spouse now. No.
but you go out, exactly. You should be anticipate some failures.
Yeah, look, there are some people who are going to say, what would you do if you knew you could not fail, right? And that's big in coaching to get people to move forward. And what would you pursue if you knew you could not fail? And I think it's a well-meaning question, but I think it's ill-advised because immediately what it's doing is it's creating a framework that failure is somehow the opposite of success. And so people get so fearful of failure because they think, well, if I failed, then I wasn't successful. And so I wonder what would be different if we looked at failure not as being the opposite of success, but maybe being a requirement of it. Right? And so how different would people then look at, all right, I go out and try something. You just mentioned every one of us at some point, we've attempted to do something. It didn't work out. We failed, but we learned. We tried something else. We tweaked it. We moved on. We continue to go. But people get so paralyzed with this idea of failing. And it's criticism. It's the fear that they're not good enough, smart enough, adaptable enough. And that's what they really worry about. But this whole concept of failure, it's just simply a part of it. You know what I mean? It's not the opposite of success.
So these messages you have are very focused. They're very strong. They apply to anybody, particularly when it comes to community and jobs, when it comes to family.
Yeah.
Have you ever been asked to counsel on marriage with any of these things that you say?
No.
I'm wondering if anything applies.
So a lot of it applies. So yeah. Interestingly enough, I was out in South Dakota 2 weeks ago, and in the book that I wrote, Dare to Matter, I outline a very specific framework that deals with significance. You know, focus on these six things when you do, the way that you think changes, the things that you do change, the results that you create change. And while I was out in South Dakota, someone there had purchased the book about 6 months ago and asked me to sign it. So while I was signing it, she said, I just want you to know, because it had like rabbit ears on it, you know, it had little stickies everywhere. She said that she and her husband were going through it together and it had transformed their marriage. And so that was really the first time where I thought, I wonder if that's something to look at, you know. But look, significance isn't just relegated to work or it's as a whole. So these things obviously are relevant across the board. What would be different if we worked through it with our spouse and talked about those things? Because I think it's a real book. You know, I think that it's real content where it's no holds barred. Let's talk about things that matter.
Well, what do you think were the main connection points in their marriage in the book that you wrote?
I have a call with her in a couple of weeks to find out that exact thing.
Okay.
Because I'm interested to see what parts resonated. What's interesting about that framework is depending on where people are in their lives, certain chapters are going to resonate differently with them based on what they have going on at that time. So, but a lot of it is getting real with fears and identity and choices and letting go. You know, those types of the concepts that are discussed in that.
But fear is a real thing, and fear keeps us in a not us as in me and you, honey. But
you keep,
keeps,
I'm with you.
Keeps us in a relationship that we shouldn't be in, and fear keeps us in a job that we don't want to be in. Yeah. So it's a very real thing.
I would say fear helps marriages in some ways. Like if you just feel like, oh, I've got this person, I'm fine, I'm good. I don't have to worry about anything. I have crazy dreams about you and like other dudes, and I have.
Oh my god!
Well, no, I'm just telling you. Like,
we've turned this about.
It's all about us. It needs to be about us. It's our podcast, honey.
It's the Holderness podcast.
Exactly. Look at the name.
The fear is a motivator.
I'm like, yes, it is a motivator for me. Like I will never feel like I'm perfect and good enough, and I can stop trying because we're in good shape, and the fear is of losing her.
Yeah.
Right? But here, that's the fear for me.
So fear can be a great motivator. The problem is fear is not a sustainable motivator.
No, it is for me. I have these dreams all the time.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, next podcast, dream analyst.
Weird dreams. Sorry, go ahead. I need to learn from.
Anyway, yeah. So look, Yes, fear is a real thing because every one of us has it, right? And that's the great thing about fears. It doesn't matter where you are in an organizational chart or what your income statement is or anything else. Everyone has certain fears. And there are some fears that we all need because we have it to protect us, right? And so I have a fear of crossing the highway with major, you know, traffic because I fear, I don't know, dying. That's a pretty good fear to have, right? I'd like to keep that one here. I have a fear of spiders and snakes. You know, so there are those types of fears. By the way, I will knock my kids out of the way to get away from a spider.
Really? So you're one of the spiders? Yeah.
And it's bad. It's like, I'm not proud of it.
You're an arachnophobe. Is that the correct
like
term?
I'm the one that kills
Let's burn the house down before, before I see it.
We have a lot of spiders in this studio.
I know. And I just moved here recently. I was like, what the hell is this whole state needs
it's
to be?
Covered
You got through a summer, right? Like right around July, they're all like,
Yeah, and my wife is terrified of snakes.
Yeah. So, me too.
So within our first week, I ended up, I hate to say this, but I accidentally killed a snake.
You're fine. Kill them all.
Okay, good. Yeah. So I killed a snake.
I'm super scared of snakes.
And a spider in within a four-hour window of each other.
You're basically ready for like an episode of Survivor.
You know, like we're out of here. You know, so burn the plot, the house, the state. So you have those types of fears, right? But the real fears, and here's the other thing. We have to put fear in the proper perspective. Like we all keep it within us. Why? Because it protects us. You know what I mean? It keeps us comfortable in many cases. For example, the fear of looking foolish. You know, why don't people ask questions during meetings? It's not because everyone's on the same page. It's not because everyone has the answers. It's because one person at that table is looking around at everyone else thinking, am I the only one who doesn't have the answer to this question? What if I ask the question? Am I going to look foolish? What if so-and-so, Penn, has the answer? Damn it, Penn. How come Penn always has the answers, right? And they're playing this mental gymnastics while sitting at the table. And so what was the driving force? Well, they didn't want to look foolish. So what do you gain from that? You didn't look foolish because you didn't ask a question. But what do you lose out? What did you miss out on? You still don't have the answer. And so that's the area of fear that we need to recognize is that we compensate for our fear. There's always the gain portion of it, but then there's the loss portion of it as well. And there's a ton of fears. Fear of being disliked. Fear of being found out, right? This is a big one for millennials and everyone else.
The imposter syndrome, right?
Imposter syndrome, right? At some point, this is all going to come crumbling down and people are going to realize you're not really as good as everyone else.
I literally say that exact phrase every day.
We are living that life, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, literally tomorrow, I'm like, people are going to realize we're not that talented.
Yeah. I think they've already realized that.
I think it's just my mom at this point. Yeah. Just keep sharing it on Facebook, Mom. Yeah. Thanks, Peggy. Okay. Yeah. But how do you, so that imposter syndrome, we aren't the only ones that feel it. And so if people feel like, we do get the, I want to start a blog and I want to start an Instagram page and I want to start a cupcake bakery. Like we get these all the time.
Yeah.
Like, how did you do it? Tell me how to do it. Should I do this?
Right.
And they're like, well, I'm not the best at this. But like, who is the best at this, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, part of it, look, if they want to start a cupcake business and they're already saying, but I'm not the best at making cupcakes.
Well, you should be pretty good at it.
Make something else then.
Yeah.
You know, start with eggs. I don't know.
Yeah, they're very good.
Part of it is, look, you have to be realistic with what you're able to provide and what you're not. Do you solve a problem? Do you do it well? Do you help anyone else out? Do you shorten their learning curve? Or do you not? You know, and so have that candid conversation. I'm not someone who says, "Oh, I want to do this." I'm like, but you suck at that. Like, you're not going to make money that way. Don't do that. I think it's a bad idea. But look, the other part of it is in that whole embracing the crazy concept. Part of it is guts. At some point, you take the leap, right? That you did. The other part of it is to recognize and love the grind. And that's what people don't want to put up with. It's a grind. Do you have the stamina? Do you have the perseverance to stick through it? Because sometimes it's that journey which ultimately provides us with the ultimate fulfillment. And some people aren't cut out for it.
Okay, so this thing that I'm looking at that has notes about you, Pete. Sorry, that was really eloquent that I just had there. Stan, you've talked about Stan several times. Yeah. It's in capital letters. Does that mean that it's an acronym or is it? Oh,
an
it's
acronym?
Not.
No, it just
acronym.
Means it's important.
Acronym.
Or I hit caps lock.
Yeah,
I'm not really
sure
which one.
Okay,
but
so we've talked about
I didn't
this.
Know
like
it was like super tall and not dumb. Like, I didn't know if it was one of those.
You got a couple of those, Penn.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's actually like a really great way to describe you, honey. Stan, you are super tall and not dumb.
Thank you, honey.
That's nice.
It just popped up in my head.
Because you're super tall and not dumb.
Sometimes anyone, not Dirk. Yeah, I can't figure it out. Sorry.
So we've determined our purpose.
Yeah.
I call it the hill you want to die on. But like you discovered your purpose in your. I think it should be the same purpose for your professional life as your personal life, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
You work with your husband.
Yeah. Mm. So you've answered the questions about money, like how much, like for how you're going to make it, and how long you can live without it, mm-hmm. right? And then if you're willing to kind of pinch pennies and do without, if that's going to be enough. How do you help? What's the next step? It's like addressing, how do you address their fear? Like, what are the ways that people can address their fear?
Three ways. One is, first of all, get the right perspective around it, right? So three P's. First one's perspective. Kind of an acronym. And I have no idea what perspective would actually stand for, but I'm curious to see what Penn would say. So you have this perspective. In other words,
you've lost him, by the way, for the next minute.
No, I'm trying really hard to listen.
Okay, I'm listening.
I'm trying super hard to listen. He's not. I am. But yeah, all I'm thinking about is.
All right, so perspective. In other words, you have these fears. Just recognize you have them to protect you, right? They're trying to protect your ego, your pride, those things. It's what keeps you comfortable, right? So you get a grip. The second one is people. One way to get beyond your fear is contrary to what most people want to do with their fear, which is keep it hidden from everyone. So my encouragement to them would be share it with someone.
Share it.
Yeah. Put it out there.
Yeah.
So that they can help you get beyond that. Right. And then the third P is persistence. Find it in those little areas where you are right up against something that you wouldn't normally do. Go out and do it. Small baby steps. You know what I mean? And so part of it is getting people to recognize just because you do something one time doesn't mean that you're no longer going to have a fear of it. What it does is you're expanding your willingness to be uncomfortable with something. That's really how you end up getting beyond your
fear. That's the grind.
That's the grind.
Yeah.
And also, I love that about just getting hungry a little bit. I think we didn't hire anybody to help us shoot or edit or any of that stuff for the very longest time. Still do a lot of that ourselves. We didn't for the longest time because we're like, let's stay lean. Let's get hungry. Let's like see how, like, let's figure that out and like make sure we do all that stuff just to like make sure we could.
Hustle and humility go a long way.
Right. Yeah.
And heart could be three H's.
Three H's. Okay. I love it.
Did you come up with anything for a perspective, Penn?
What do you mean? Perspective is one word. Yes. Oh, I have to do the whole thing? Okay, hang on. You're right. Sorry, you guys keep talking.
So we again.
Spelled it right.
Yeah, we're getting these questions a lot about should I, could I, would I. And I think those are great questions to ask. I'm a big, like, go chase your dreams.
Right.
Have some sunshine.
Yeah.
There's a unicorn. And I paint a really pretty picture. But I have to say, I would rather live on ramen. We do love ramen. Mm-hmm. Than sit in a job and make a lot of money and be miserable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people who choose to do that, right? It always comes down to a choice.
Right.
Yeah. And so they'll give you a million reasons and they'll complain and yet they don't do anything different.
Right.
So is it really that bad? I don't know. You're making it out to be one way and yet you do nothing. So now I think something's wrong with you.
Right? Yeah.
Because if it's that bad and you're not doing anything,
I do have a very dear.
What's wrong with you?
Go ahead, Max.
I was just going to say, isn't there in talking about success? I think like quality of life is sometimes much more important than say financial success or so. And like I stopped working 70 hours a week as a restaurant manager so that I could record these guys on microphones and other people as well. And my quality of life is so much better, though my bank account is so much smaller.
Yeah.
But I'm happier, so I feel way more successful.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
And so it comes out, well, what matters to you? Well, family matters to me. So, you know, for example, I don't speak on March 27th or August 27th. Why?
March 27th because it's my birthday.
Is that? Yeah. Well, it's my son's birthday.
Aww.
Right. So now that's why I don't speak, because it's his birthday and Kim's birthday. So that, you know. But
your wife, you'll speak on her birthday anyway.
So I asked her that and then she said, well, how much do you charge? I told her, and she was like, well, I'll pack your bags. So, you know, it's
get
a little
out.
Bit. Yeah, yeah. So
happy birthday to me.
She's very excited for me to be gone on her birthday. But, you know, that's a decision that I made in advance, right? So this time, if anyone's asking me, look, either I'm not speaking that day or my family comes with me. So what does that mean? If If they can't come with me, then I don't speak. So do I miss out on that engagement? Probably.
But and you know, it's okay to say
it doesn't
no.
matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't mind missing out on that. Why? Because I've made a priority-based decision in advance that's what's important to me. So you miss out on an engagement? All right, there'll be others.
There'll be others. Okay. Yeah.
Boundaries are super important. Wait, was that what you guys were talking about?
Yeah.
Okay,
no.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
No, because we had a thing about that last night.
Oh, Penn and I got in a huge fight last night.
About I feel like we should bring that up. No?
So,
look, he's already revealed that he has dreams about you with other people. So,
fears and insecurities.
Well, I have some boundaries. So
she just didn't tell me about them until the middle of the fight.
Hidden boundaries.
Yeah. Yes.
Nice.
No.
So the best kind.
Right. Exactly.
So that is like an electric shock collar when you cross them.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So I have.
We still haven't solved this fight.
Oh,
by the way,
we haven't had a chance to talk about it.
Still happening.
No. Here's what happened. I have this thing. We have a lot of the people we work with, the brands we work with, are on the West Coast.
Okay.
So end of workday for them is 5 or 6 o'clock there is 8 or 9 o'clock for us.
Mm-hmm.
That is the time by 8 o'clock, we have we can watch a 20-minute Netflix something with my kids. Their homework is done. They've taken their showers. They've brushed their teeth. Let's sit here and snuggle. 8 o'clock, I'm on the couch and I'm snuggling. I'm not looking at my phone. I don't want to answer my phone. And I would never do that to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that we were getting a phone call from Larry Shapiro, who I love and adore, and he helps negotiate brand stuff, and he's a daily part of our life. But guess what? Larry Shapiro, that's work, and I was with my kids.
You were on your computer,
researching,
and your kids were watching TV.
I was researching stuff for after Christmas of where we're going to stay.
That I suggested.
Yes. And so
because I was trying to help you out.
Yeah. See,
okay, go ahead.
Okay. God bless America. Anyway.
Just fill in the blanks.
So anyway, Larry then called Penn answered, and he's having a conversation. I don't think this is going to – we're not going to solve this, and now this is getting embarrassing. So I didn't want to talk to Larry. He's mm-hmm. Anyway.
So here's what was happening. Larry was talking to my ear. Kim was shouting into my other ear.
Mm. I wasn't shouting. I just said, I don't want to talk right now.
No, you were saying, I don't want to do that. And then Larry was like, well, what if we did this? He's like, I still don't know if I want to do that. Well, what about this? So then I took the phone, and I put it up to Kim's ear, and she looked at it like it was Pete with a spider.
Mm. Right.
And just like – right. And then I said, I'm sorry, Larry. Kim just doesn't want to talk right now.
No, he said, Kim doesn't want to talk to you.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, it was true.
Well, it's partially true.
No,
yeah. It's true. 100%
true. I said,
I'm sorry. Can I call back? Larry was apologetic. And then Kim lit me up, for being rude to Larry, where in case, all I had done that entire day, so I'm getting ready to leave Cleveland, by the way, guys. I'm sorry. Mm. That's a saying we say that when, the fight goes somewhere else, there it shouldn't. I'm leaving Cleveland. That whole day, I'd been, doing stuff to try to be helpful. It was my helpful day. I was feeling really good about myself for being helpful. I was doing all the carpool. I was doing all the doctor's visits. I was, editing, working. Didn't have a lot of time for myself. I tried to look up this place where I could stay over Christmas, handed it to Kim. And then when the phone call came in, I was trying to help. I was like, hey, how can I help you? How can I help you? And then I got lit up for being rude, and I had something – I turned into a crazy person.
Right. Something got triggered.
I just started rah, 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 rah. She told me I was acting like a lunatic. She was right that I was. I went upstairs, and we didn't talk for the rest of the day.
This is the first time we've talked.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
That's great.
No, actually, it's funny. No, we got up this morning.
And we're whatever.
We both realized that it was a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk all last night. What was the – why are we telling this story again?
I don't know.
I don't even remember what was the purpose of this conversation.
Why are you telling the story? Anyway, we're fine. No, Lola –
we're fine, but yeah.
Lola sat down next to me.
It was boundaries.
Boundaries.
It was boundaries.
No, boundaries.
Yes, thank you
but Lola sat down.
That,
and she goes, is this going to be one of those situations where you just don't talk about it and then it's okay? And I said, yeah. And she's like, okay. And then we finished watching the show.
Yeah.
It's fine. We really – that had nothing to do. Embrace the crazy? Is that where we tie in the bow and embrace the crazy?
He said boundaries. And you have a boundary where you don't want to talk work after 8 o'clock, which is brand new to me because you love talking work right before we go to sleep. But I guess with other people outside this area. And so I discovered that boundary in the middle of this.
Mm.
And now I know
he didn't
it.
Have a shock collar on, so I couldn't.
Oh, poor Ruby.
Penn, you were feverishly working on the acronym for perspective.
It's so bad.
What you got?
I gave up. Honestly, I wanted to listen again. Personally, every rainbow sees people.
Pete is dying on the inside.
Perspective.
Every cobweb traverses incredibly vigorous exercise. It
makes no sense. That's exactly what that means.
Yeah, it makes no
sense. That's what that word's for.
It's like five different directions. I looked at it, I'm like, this is the worst writing I've ever done in my entire life. It's like a haiku got drunk and made out. Right. With a fortune cookie and had an illegitimate child.
I know you don't like mushrooms. Yeah. Did you have any this morning?
Oh,
I
can't. Nope.
Oh, my God. On that note, guys.
That's a good way to meet.
Pete is super happy he drove in here for this.
Yeah.
If you
steal this in your next book, I'm going to be.
Well, yeah, that's a keeper, let me tell you.
Just have some perspective.
Right.
Just have a rainbow that shoots cobwebs at vigorous exercise. Okay, wow. So should Penn quit his job? I'm kidding.
That's a good question.
No.
I haven't been thinking about quitting it, so does that mean I should quit?
Pete, yes. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For coming in and helping
us. Where can we find you?
Embrace our crazy.
SmithImpact.com.
Okay. Smith, that's the best way to do it?
That's the best way.
Okay. Do you do personal coaching or?
Very little.
Okay.
So I have other staff that will spend more of their time.
Oh, you've got staff. Oh.
He has clients now, honey.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
He has clients now. Yeah. And in your book, we're going to put your website and the link to your book and the show notes.
Cool.
And
just so you know, this podcast will air in a few days, and if thousands of people quit their jobs, as a result,
I'm absolving myself
of all responsibility for this right now, because you really do make some great points.
Yeah.
But I think you also make great points about why you should stay.
Yeah,
so I think that's good.
I think if you're fulfilled in other areas, then cool. Thank you, Pete.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Remember, every rainbow sees people.
And take a screenshot of this and tag us on Instagram, will ya? Share it with your friends. That way we can maybe pay Max more money and his bank account won't be so terrible. Sorry, Max.
Sweet.
Okay.
Cardio requires incredibly vigorous exercise.
What was that?
Nonsense.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.